From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 5th day of April, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. We'll hear an update of some agricultural news. It's related to policies in Washington, D.C. And Eric Snodgrass will be here from Nutrien Ag Solutions. If you can stay with us for the whole hour, you'll hear all of our Commodity Week program, otherwise a portion of it. You can also listen to it right now online if you'd like in its entirety at willag.org, and many of these radio stations will carry it over the weekend.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn for the day settled at $4.34 1/4. It was down a penny. July at $4.46 3/4, 3/4 lower, and December futures 3/4 lower as well at $4.72 1/2 a bushel. May soybeans $11.85 up 5. July $11.96 3/4, 4 1/2 higher, and new crop November soybeans up a penny, $11.84 3/4 the settlement price. Bean meal down 40 cents for the day. The bean oil 74 cents higher. Wheat futures soft red up 10 1/4 at $5.81 3/4, and the hard red July at $5.79 1/2 up 6 1/2 for the afternoon. Live cattle futures down $3.80 at $1.72 1/2. Feeders were off $5.70 at $2.38 17 1/2, and lean hogs were up $2.90. They finished at $107.90. Crude oil up 38 cents a barrel for the day, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 39,271, up 357. Mike Zuzlow from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us, as he always does on a Friday afternoon, to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Mike. It's been a busy week, and there's been a whole lot going on. You're closer to the beef cattle herds, the large ones, not so much the dairy industry, although big dairy industry in Idaho and some other places to the west as well, Texas too, which is where avian influenza, bird flu, the H5N1 or the high path has been located. How much of an impact has this had on the trade for the week?
It's an increasingly problematic impact, Todd, and I think we saw the news about Argentina Grain Exchange lowering their corn forecast on some disease pressure late in the session, about an hour before the trade or 40 minutes before the trade, taking the number down to 52 million tons. And, you know, that is, you know, very far away from the 55, 56 that the trade is probably trading right now. And yet corn closed lower, meal closed lower. I think the meal and corn felt a lot of pressure from the new lows in the livestock sector and the new lows in the cattle sector specifically. And broad brushing it at this point, we're heading into summer grilling season. We have energy prices, gasoline prices going higher. RBOB unleaded futures at a new 2024 high this week. Crude oil at a new 2024 high this week. Stock market looks like it wants to pull back some and did this week some as well. And so you've got several things going on right now. Other than the hog market, the cattle market has seemed to lost a lot of its friends, and really is kind of problematic for me and my clients, my rancher clients out here, because there was a dairy herd in Kansas that did have HPAI. And the fact that it could spread is something that all of us are worried about in the ag commodities. And it's been bad enough with all the droughts the last few years around the southern plains. We really can't lose too much more in price action, or we're going to really start bleeding in our profit and balance sheets at this point.
I haven't read enough about what the mitigation issues are with this particular disease. I know what they do with bird flocks. What do they do with dairy herds?
Yeah, this is the thing that I think probably needs to be explored a little bit more from an official capacity, in my opinion, from APHIS and FDA. The APHIS people have done a tremendous job making the consumer understand that the milk is safe and that eggs are safe as long as they're cooked thoroughly. But the milk supply, the dairy cow that's infected, that milk will not enter the milk supply. The pasteurization of milk is an extra benefit and protection against hurtful to human consumption. The beef side of the equation, I think the problem lies that the dairy industry, the dairy cattle, have been genetically moved towards beef production. They use the milk, and then they marble them up and try and get them into the prime grade nowadays. I'm seeing statistics anywhere from 10 to 20% of our beef supply is from the dairy herd. Now, the age of the animal is a question mark as far as whether it's an issue in terms of does it really get into the serious beef supply. But the beef supply is the beef supply when it comes to the consumer. So that's what's most problematic for me is I think we need to get some science underneath us and say beef supply is safe even if dairy cattle are getting it because, A, we're keeping it away from processing at slaughterhouses. Or something like that that makes the consumer understand that the beef consumption is very safe. And I believe it is very safe. I'm not saying it's not.
Yeah, so it really at this point is a twin function, what the science says and what the psychology of the market, or in this case the consumer might say. Probably won't know that for some time, maybe not even next week, I would think.
Yeah, I've been talking to a lot of people this week, both officially and unofficially, and I would not want to have to be talking about this a couple weeks from now. I hope that next week is kind of the peak of everything, and then all of a sudden it goes away. But if it's lingering here for another month, that's going to trouble me in terms of not only getting cattle hedges in place farther out than I already have them, but also maybe looking at the corn hedging side of the equation as well. This is where the bird flock is also something very, very important because we got to realize the Texas poultry industry is right next to our biggest corn buyer, Mexico, and their poultry industry as well. So this is one of those black swans that you just don't want to wake up to. And it's been a tough week for a lot of producers right now.
Yeah, and while we don't talk about the poultry industry a great deal, we usually will concentrate on pork producers and beef producers, not so much dairy either. But poultry is the largest portion of that feed and residual marketplace. They consume a lot of corn.
And there is no other way but to call the birds, is my understanding, in terms of limiting the disease spread and impact because of the migratory patterns of the birds that we deal with in North America. And so there's only one way out of getting rid of the bird flu, and that's getting rid of the animals that potentially could be impacted by it.
All right. Now, tell me a little bit about things on the ground there. How are your farmers in that part of the world particularly feeling as it relates to demand from their ethanol plants, wheat that's in the ground at this point, and what spring might look like for them?
Yeah, producers are feeling good. I'm telling them that I think that we could still have a very supportive April price action in new crop corn and beans. We've got the wheat market turning higher, new monthly highs for the soft red wheat today, close to making a high above the March highs. So we've got the outside markets, the crude, the RBOB, the gold record highs, copper moving up to almost 2-year highs. All that started to finally move into the wheat side of the equation. So producers are very in tune with the idea of getting hedges on and in place in April on stronger price action. And I still think we're pretty much on a track similar to 2014, 2021, where both those years were good April price action for both new crop corn and new crop beans.
One final question. Outside markets, influences, China, other places around the planet you're watching closely?
They are improving. And that's the bad side of this issue with the HPAI. We've got an inflationary mindset building in the commodity sector. And that was the last two dominoes that fell was a weaker dollar before today's jobs report, new weekly lows, and a weakening stock market before today's jobs report. And so we've kind of ticked all the boxes that the commodity inflation bug is kind of back in the markets, and that's supportive. So that's where I don't want to squander this opportunity.
Hey, thanks much.
You bet. Thank you, sir.
That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. We have a couple of policy-related news items for the day. We'll begin with something from the Hagstrom Report earlier in the week. The Republican Study Committee, a conservative House group, it writes, has released a fiscal year 2025 budget that targets many nutrition and agriculture programs for cuts or elimination. The report is 180 pages long, but there's a short guide the Hagstrom Report supplied, which includes these items. The Farm Safety Net programs, ARC and PLC, would be capped to only farms with an adjusted gross income below $500,000. The Commodity Credit Corporation defunding the Partnership for Climate Smart Commodities program and requiring congressional approval for all future expenditures would be put into place. Crop insurance premium subsidies would be cut by 14%. And cap the overall amount of crop insurance subsidy to a single farmer to $40,000. You may read more on this topic. Look for the Hagstrom Report. We'll stay in Washington, D.C., but turn to energy policy. The ethanol industry says the Biden administration's push for an all-electric vehicle fleet is on a collision course with reality. The Renewable Fuels Association says at some point the tax policies, infrastructure shortcomings, and new auto emission standards to force a switch to all EVs will hit a roadblock. Troy Bredenkamp is with the Renewable Fuels Association.
The infrastructure is not there, and the consumers. There's been a definite pullback from a consumer perspective on the purchasing of electric, especially all battery electric vehicles.
Bredenkamp argues the best solution is to combine technologies and for the administration to let America's farmers help power the future.
I think at some point they're going to have a realization that the sweet point here is a plug-in hybrid concept. And that's where we want to make sure that those plug-in hybrids turn into flex-fuel vehicle plug-in hybrids, because we think that would be the best of both worlds.
Troy Bredenkamp is with the Renewable Fuels Association, otherwise known as the RFA. It lobbies Congress on behalf of the ethanol industry. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible now joins us to discuss what's been happening in the forecast, not only here in the United States, but across the planet. Hi, Eric. Thank you for being with us on a drizzly Friday. Speaking of which, what can you tell me about these most recent rains and, I guess, some of the upcoming rainfall as well here in the Midwest?
Well, I mean, it's been unpleasant, but I don't care. I wanted every bit of that rain. Unfortunately, it did come in with quite a bit of severe weather from Texas all the way to Ohio. You probably heard a lot of the news reports, but we had over 800 reports of severe weather out of this system that hit us earlier in the week. But yeah, it got cold. Yeah, it snowed a little bit. In fact, it snowed a lot up in Wisconsin, but it dropped across Illinois, even parts of Iowa, but mostly Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, parts of Kentucky, Tennessee. I mean, we saw 1 to 4 inches of rain, some places even more than that. And we needed it. We were still at 100 centimeters or 40 inches, seeing significant moisture problems. And for the first time in a while, I've had multiple growers around the area tell me their tile's draining. That water soaked in. It came slowly for a lot of us over multiple days. And it was exactly what we needed. And we have a little bit more next week as well. There is a system this weekend that's going to go up in the Northern Plains. It's going to drop a front through us. Let me rephrase that. It's going to sweep a front through us. And what I mean is that front's not going to be coming out of the north. It's going to be coming out of the west. So it's not going to drop our temperatures like the cold morning we just saw this morning here on Friday. But then we have another system next week that's going to sneak out of Texas and go very slowly across the south. That's going to give us some rain. But all of this, right, is before tax day. And what that means is we don't typically really go after planting a crop until, you know, the second half of April. And there's better news as we go forward with breaking away out of this pattern. But what we did just recharged our river systems, flooded some of them. It's going to put the Mississippi back up to a really good level. And it just soaked our soil right at the right time. I couldn't be happier, despite the fact that it's been miserable.
So I was looking, thank you for the Agrible daily email, by the way, at some of the farms that I have across to Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, and you talked about subsoil moisture levels, but many of these places, particularly in Illinois and Iowa, are running ahead of schedule for their year-to-date rainfall. Does that make much of a difference between those two different categories, which I assume are, you know, kind of topsoil and subsoil narratives?
Yeah, it takes a while to recharge the subsoil, right? I mean, we can take the top 48 inches and get it recharged in a single event. It takes a season to recharge everything below that. So it's nice that we're running above normal on the, you know, year-to-date values. But to be honest, we need to see a good wet spring to buy us anytime should there be any drought risk showing up this upcoming growing season. So overall, I'm pretty happy that this happened. But at the same time, doesn't mean we're out of the woods. Hydrologic cycle's fast, you know? So, I mean, we can quickly go from talking about too much rain to none at all. And that's every year. That's the narrative we always carry.
Under the category of what's happening, unless you've been under a rock, you know that there is an eclipse coming. And that'll be on the 8th, Monday. What can you tell us about the viewing weather?
Well, first of all, I want to know if you're going down to see it. Are you going to stick around here, or are you going to head down and try to get right into totality?
I am going to stay here.
Me too. We're close. We are close enough. I'll get enough here. Now, that's not to knock anybody that's going to go see it. I mean, if it wasn't going to be for the millions of people that are going to try to do it and the way that the clouds are going to limit the viewing, making it certain spots that are going to be very good, I'd love to go down there and see it. But as it stands, the system that's coming out of California on Sunday, what we need in Illinois is for it to just stay in California and Arizona and not get into New Mexico or Texas by Monday. And what I mean by that is the farther east it makes it, the bigger the cloud shield is out ahead of it, which could start to obscure some of our ability to view this. Now, right now, if you ask me who's got the worst shot at viewing it, it's going to be probably Texas toward the Mid-South. In fact, we're worried about the Red River Valley, which is kind of right where the Red River Valley of the South, down there in Texas and Oklahoma, right where the eclipse is going to go through, to maybe have too much cloud. But as you come up to our neck of the woods, I think right now, based on today, I think we're going to have decent viewing windows of this thing. But it's such a short window that it happens that you can get one cloud to ruin the whole thing, right? So that's it. I can't give you any guarantees. Maybe if you went to northern Maine, you could get a really good view of it, but they just got 18 inches of snow. So I don't think you want to go there.
The one place that will have a good view, almost guaranteed, I guess, and longer, is the Delta Airlines flights. Did you see that?
I didn't see it, but I imagine I know where you're going with this. I'd love to be above all the clouds and see it.
Well, they have two flights. Eclipse flights that actually have two of them.
You're kidding.
No, I heard this on the news this morning, and there'll be 4 minutes of viewing time. The left and the right side of the plane, they'll, I guess, flip back and forth at a 30-degree angle, right?
Oh,
jeez. Yeah, I know. I didn't hear what that cost, but I can imagine that was probably a fairly tidy sum. Summer forecast. Yeah. Summer, let's stay on track. Summer forecast. Have you got any news for us?
All right. Later today, I get new long-range data from the European model. I'm going to give you that next week. So what am I thinking about right now? My main area of focus is going to come down to two quick stories. There's three spots I'm worried about. They're all in the Cotton Belt. Okay. That means that, say, south of us, we tend to get a lot of ridge riding thunderstorms in those summers. If I use history as my guide, I'm telling you the Cotton Belt is where I'm worried about right now. What could change that narrative, and this is the second thing, is if the ocean temperatures off the West Coast get colder and colder and colder. The only reason they do that is if we build low pressure along the West Coast throughout April into May and into June, churning up all the colder water and allowing for the atmosphere to stay in a trough there. If there's a trough in the West, June, July, August, we do not have it here in the Midwest, which means we have ridges and heat. So watch the ocean temperatures. In fact, I'll watch them and tell you about it every Friday. I'll tell you what's going on with those ocean temperatures, because if they get colder, our drought risk goes up. Right now, no alarm bells are ringing in my head. It looks to me that this summer for us is going to be hotter than average and also stormier and wetter than average, which presents its own problems.
As a reminder, hotter than average means warmer for the overall temperature, not particularly.
That's right.
Okay, right. So not.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily hot daytime temperatures. I think it's hotter overnight lows. So instead of us cooling down the mid-60s, maybe you're talking about upper 60s. And unfortunately, at some unfavorable times, knocking on the door 70 to 75 for a few overnight lows.
You remember last summer when we were rooting for the Western Corn Belt to have more of a drought than you did in the East? we're rooting this year, right now, for the folks in Mato Grosso and other parts of Brazil to have dry weather, though I think that's somewhat been alleviated.
Now, we just hope that your radio signal power doesn't get to those folks, right? We don't want them to know. No, but. down south in Brazil, this was a forecast I missed, Todd. I mean, for weeks back in February and March, what I tell you, I said, I think it's going to get drier mid to late April. And it's just not there. It's just not there in the Safrinha corn area. In fact, it's looking stormy and wet all the way through the middle of the month. And then if you get good rain all the way through the rest of April, it doesn't matter. That crop will be fine, you know, going into May and June anyways. So that's a bit of a misstep on my part, thinking it was going to be drier than it is. And some even the drier holes down in Paraná Mato Grosso do Sul are getting filled in this next week. So that's the long and short of it. I think that South America is not going to take a major weather hit on their Safrinha crop.
Well, you and I will have fun this week watching the eclipse from right here in Mahomet, Illinois, I think. So
that's right.
We'll talk about it Friday next week. How about that?
That sounds good, Todd.
That's Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions in Agribault. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org. willag.org, or search the Closing Market Report out in your favorite podcast applications, now including YouTube Music. In fact, you can find us in the FarmDoc YouTube website. That's at youtube.com/@FarmDoc.